side that we need so much. The side of a touch or the scent of a sand or the strength of an oak we roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories hoard and to use them.
Take a ride. To talk with Art Bell, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
What is the greatest question in life? What do you think the greatest question in life is? Well, for me, I think there is no question about it. It's whether there's anything after. What is the nature of death? Is it really the end? The worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. The end of consciousness, the big sleep, nothing on the other side. Or, as thousands have suggested, there is something, they say, those who have come back on the other side. It's the biggest question there is for humanity. A former psychological counselor, Peter Novak, walked away from patient care in 1985 to devote himself to the full-time study of death and the afterlife. He has examined and compared the afterlife beliefs of dozens of cultures, old and new, interviewed hundreds of near-death experiencers, past life regression subjects, psychologists, parapsychologists, theologians, and religious scholars around the world. He spent the last 19 years studying an ancient religious belief, the binary soul doctrine, which he says provides a scientific explanation for virtually all afterlife phenomena being reported today, as well as a majority of mankind's cultural traditions about the afterlife. Peter has been interviewed on several radio programs, appeared on a number of TV shows, has been a featured speaker at several conferences. In addition, his research has been featured in a number of academic and professional journals as well as magazines. There is no bigger question. Here to deal with it in a moment, Peter Novak. Over the years, I have interviewed many people who have gone to the door of death. They've been physically dead and they've come back, and I've heard things that have curled my hair, but you know, there's always that seed of doubt. I think all of us wish very strongly in our hearts to believe there is something that comes after death. It's a very, very strong desire, maybe the strongest of them all. But there's always that seed of doubt. If you haven't been there and done that, well, there's a seed of doubt. And there cannot be a better way to open up any interview than to ask this first question. Peter, what makes you think you have discovered the secret of death? That's some question, Peter.
I think that I've discovered this because all of the evidence seems to support that conclusion. All of the different types of afterlife phenomena being reported today, can be explained by one theory. And virtually all of mankind's different religions seem to be traced back to one original afterlife belief.
So then, when you say you've discovered the secret of death, you mean a combination of studying the religion, studying the testimony of those who have died and come back,
right.
All of that is enough for you to say, yeah, it's real. It really... All right, but here I'm going to try and play the devil's advocate with you a little bit, because believe me, Peter, I want to believe. I want to believe, and I think most people do. They don't want to believe that's the end of it. They
want
to believe.
We want to know.
Well, we do want to know. Yes, we do want to know. And that wanting has led me down many paths, you know, into EVP and all kinds of, you know, looking at ghosts and looking at all these reports that the people have come back. And you're just saying that all this evidence put together is a verdict.
Yes, I think so. I think, and that's a really good analogy, because if you're in a courtroom and you see all the evidence that's pointing to one conclusion, then yes, you can feel comfortable making that conclusion. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that the problem that we've had is that not knowing this ancient theory that used to exist, we've looked at all the different kind of afterlife reports, and we've seen them as being very different.
That's concerned. You know, that's concerned me, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, people should be made aware that not everybody who clinically dies comes back with, you know, stories of white lights and relatives and all the rest of it. Not all of them come back with that. A significant portion of them do not. Maybe even a majority of them do not. Isn't that true?
That does seem to be true. But the ones that have the stories do seem to be consistent. And as far as a lack of memory about what may not have happened while they were unconscious or while they were dead, does not in itself deny that something happened. You know, memory loss is very common.
No, it doesn't deny it. And you make a good point about the stories being similar. Peter, by now there have been thousands and thousands of these reports.
Near-death experience.
That's right. How truly similar are they?
Well, they seem to be to follow a basic pattern. They start off with a dark phase, and then they end up with a light phase. And statistically, they've shown that majority of people actually report the dark phase more than the light phase. However, the people that...
What do you mean by dark? Did you say dark face or...
Dark phase.
Phase.
Right.
So in other words...
You know, in the beginning, they will say that, you know, they rose from their body, and then they found themselves in a black void or a black tunnel.
Oh, yes.
And usually that's a very brief period of time in a near-death experience, and then they move on, you know, to a realm of light.
Out of curiosity, Peter, mm-hmm. I once interviewed a young lady named Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Who had an NDE that I will never in all my memory forget. All my life, I will never forget it. It was so vivid. How many people experienced... She had seen some rooms with some agonizing people in them, other rooms containing joyful things, sort of a... I don't know... what's the right word for it? A panorama of what seemed like good and joy and then evil and, you know, both sides of it.
Mm-hmm.
Others have reported relatives, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
How many report that kind of thing?
Well, how many report visits to heaven or hell?
Yes, or you know, visions of, I guess, what could be
visions
heaven
of heaven or hell. Actually, it's an interesting distinction. Some people report both. Some people report visions or visits to heaven or visits to hell. Some people will report a visit to heaven and then a vision of hell. They're looking into hell from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
How many people do this? How many people have that's what I call the light experience. It's where have a period where they encounter a huge area, and it's filled with all kinds of forms and structures,
right,
and meaning,
right,
and a great deal of memory that they will experience, and a great deal of emotion that they will experience during this phase. Of all the people that do have the near-death experiences, it is less that report this than the people that just report the dark phase. I don't know the exact numbers, but it is less. The majority, the single most commonly reported element of near-death experiences is the dark phase, where they're just floating alone.
Peter, if we were to do a survey in modern America and ask how many Americans believe there is an existence, a consciousness that is after death,
mm-hmm,
what kind of result do you think we would get?
Well, I think that what you're asking is how many people believe in life after death.
Yes.
And I think that the numbers are high. I think they're in the high 80 percentile, mm-hmm, the last ones that I've heard of. That was within the last 10 years. It's interesting that even though America is, and basically the whole world, is growing less and less religious, we still seem to be very strongly, have strong belief in afterlife, in survival. I think more people believe in heaven than hell, but still just basic survival, I think the majority of people do believe in it.
Well, just because people are becoming perhaps less religious in a structural way, that doesn't mean,
Well, not less spiritual, but...
Yes, yeah. That doesn't mean they don't have a different spiritual view, perhaps, mm-hmm, but still a spiritual view.
Right.
Why is it so important in this day and age for people to believe in life after death?
I think that it is important because I think all cultures need to believe in life after death. If
cultures
don't believe in life after death, then they start questioning the value of life. They start questioning the value of their own life. They start questioning the value of their neighbors' lives. And they start, you know, if someone is walking down the street and he doesn't necessarily think his life is of any value, and he doesn't necessarily think that his neighbor's life is of any value, well, then he's not going to be a very law-abiding citizen.
You know, I have tossed that into the face of a lot of people who come on my program and believe that sort of thing, and they say, nonsense. Why would you think that, even if I believe there's nothing after this life, that I would behave in some criminal or immoral way? It's just not true. Even though I don't believe in life after death, I'm still a moral person. I still conduct myself on a day-to-day basis, dealing fairly with people.
Well, it's a question of value. What you do value and what you don't value. If in the end, if you believe that, you know, we live and we die and then after we're gone, there's nothing left of us.
Mm-hmm.
If there's no memory of any of our experiences or any of our choices,
right,
then none of those experiences and none of those choices have any intrinsic value. And if they don't have any intrinsic value, then why act as if they do? And I do think that...
So you're saying that it's important that people believe so that there is social stability in
exactly
the world.
Exactly right. I think that uh-huh, if you look back through history, every civilization has had a foundation. There are people
true.
Believed in life after death, and I think it's very
absolutely
important.
True. All right, but I've got a guy I interview, Matthew Alper, and he wrote a book called The God Part of the Brain.
Mm-hmm.
He believes that there is something in our brain, that some part of our brain, that is used because we have the greatest fear in the world for man is that of death. And the
right.
only way that our brains can deal with the fear of death is by concocting the notion that there is something more. There is a creator and there is a life after death, and that's how we deal with the fear of it. Otherwise, we couldn't deal with the fear of it.
Well, that's absolutely true. See, that is the other option. Either there is a genuine experience, a genuine survival, a genuine life after death,
right,
or all the stories we hear about it are just people making up stories. And that's why I think my research is so important, because it shows that all of these stories are basically saying the same thing. They're all consistent. And you wouldn't have that consistency if people were just randomly making up stories.
Well, another part of it is a full life review. Of those, Peter, who report a life after death experience, how many report a full life review? Kind of a fast, you know, real.
The people, well, first of all, the life review actually it tends to occur at the very beginning of the light stage or during the transition between the dark phase and the light phase. I mean, after they're floated in the dark void and then they go through the tunnel and then they find themselves in the realm of light. Usually the life review occurs at the very beginning of that light phase, and I think that it occurs in the majority of the cases of people that report a light phase.
Have you ever had an experience yourself?
Have I had a near-death experience? Not to my knowledge. Although I am under the impression that an awful lot of people in the modern age have had near-death experiences as young children, experiencing fevers and whatnot, that they don't remember consciously.
Well, I remember fevers as a youngster. Mm-hmm. Most young people go through that. At 103, and I began to see things and imagine things. Mm-hmm. But, gee, Peter, you know, that seems to me, if you're going to count that as an after-death experience, it to me it lessens the.
Well, no, I'm saying that they. I believe that it is possible for people to have near-death experiences that they don't remember consciously, but yet. It's been noted by many researchers that near-death experiences tend to change a person's attitude, a person's behavior, a person's perspective on life.
Mm-hmm.
And even if, I think there's a lot of people in our culture, that even though they don't recognize that they've had near-death experiences, you still seem to see the effects of them as if they had had some. So you have to question, maybe they didn't, don't remember it.
In other words, they straighten out their act, they become a more moral person.
More spiritual, more looking at the big picture.
All right. How many of these do you suppose might be false reports, concocted stories?
I think it's certainly possible. I'm sure that some of them are. I have had questions in my own mind about some cases I've read about. You know, people who are always wanting to get some attention. But I do think that the vast majority of the cases that you read about, the cases that are chalked up, are valid. They're genuine.
I would tend to go along with that, but I suppose somebody might concoct such a story, particularly somebody with a religious background. That's one way mm-hmm. to certainly proselytize, isn't it? If you can go up to somebody and say, look, there is a God, there's another side, because I've been there and done that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a way of imparting and proselytizing your religion. What is this binary soul doctrine that you talk about?
Okay. It seems that 2,000-4,000 years ago, cultures all over the planet, religions all over the planet, had the same idea about what happened after you die. They believe that people possess, while you're alive, two separate souls. And when you die, these two souls would separate from each other, and they would go off and have very, very different kinds of afterlife experiences.
Hmm.
Now, the interesting thing about that theory is that a lot of these traditions describe those two souls the same way that modern science now describes the conscious and the unconscious, or the left brain and the right brain. And if you ask yourself, well, what would happen if the conscious and the unconscious actually did survive death but divided apart in the process, that theory explains virtually everything you can find about different kinds of afterlife phenomena. It explains near-death experiences, it explains ghosts, it explains poltergeists, it explains past life regression, it explains reincarnation and heaven and hell, it explains limbo. I think that it even explains traditions about zombies and vampires.
Huh. Are you a religious person, Peter, yourself?
I think that, well, it depends on how you define the term. I guess you'd have to see that I am, although I don't think that any organized religion would claim me as their own at this point in time.
Well, the question would be whether you claim any of them as your own.
I would have to go back about 1600 years before I found one that really spoke to my heart.
1500 or 1600 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, actually, I think that the first 200-300 years of Christianity had the story pretty much true.
All right, hold it right there, Peter. We're at the bottom of the hour. So we'll break here and come back with Peter Novak and the secrets of death. From the high desert, middle of the night, I'm Art Bell.
Bell. Call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
You know, actually, that's something I've always worried about, that one reason for religion might be to keep everybody sort of in control. And Peter said it himself, that's the reason people need to, you know, believe in life after death, because otherwise there would be no control. Every day now, we get more stories about people walking into churches with guns and opening fire or office buildings or whatever, and then doing themselves at the end. It seems like that might be that kind of people. You know, if you didn't believe there was anything coming after, then what would stop you from doing something like that? Again, you know, the whole premise that people need to believe in life after death so that there's a little bit of control out there. Otherwise, we've got more people marching into churches with guns, doing away with people and then themselves. It worries me because the whole darn premise is just so logical as a reason to have that belief. in other words, control of the masses, Peter. You see, it doesn't help me believe it. It makes me worry because it's a logical premise to keep people in control. You know, the big lie. And I'm not saying it's that because we're as bad as anybody in my audience. I want to believe, Peter. But that's a pretty logical premise for people keeping people under control.
Well, certainly, but that's not why we should believe. That's why we need to believe.
That's why we need to believe.
We need to believe as far as we need to have something that we can believe in, in order to maintain society, to keep society from self-destructing.
Huh.
But the problem is, okay, we're in the modern age, right?
Yes.
And we have all of this information and data coming in from every quarter.
Yes.
And, you know, this is not the way it was 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 1,000 years ago. And nowadays, things are very different. Nowadays, we hear all of these different kinds of stories about near-death experiences and about past life regression, about this belief from this culture and that belief from that culture, and they all seem to be very different. And because of this, people are having a hard time saying, well, you know, why should I believe in anything? They all seem to be telling me something different.
Well,
why should I believe in anything?
They're different, Peter, but they're also similar. And again, I go back to my good friend Matthew Alper, who talks about this God part of the brain. And he said, look, you know, even if you go to these deserts, some island, with a jungle island in the South Pacific where, you know, modern man has never gone before, when you get there, you're going to find some natives who believe in something. They worship the sun or the moon, or they make sacrifices, or, you know, they believe in something.
They are going to believe in something, yes. But my research has convinced me that there is a common denominator when it comes to their afterlife beliefs. People aren't just coming up with whatever kind of idea they could come up out of their imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Inevitably, the afterlife beliefs seem to always follow the same basic patterns, and that suggests to me that they are actually looking at the same phenomenon.
Peter, what did you do? Did you actually go out and interview people who have made these claims?
I have interviewed people, and I have done a lot of research of other people's work. I actually look at myself as being the next generation of afterlife research. You know, right now we have tons of people that are out there studying near-death experiences.
Right.
We have tons of people that are out there studying ghosts. We have another set of people out there studying poltergeists.
That's right.
Another set of people out there studying out-of-body experiences. Another set of people out there studying soul retrieval. Another set of people out there studying past life regression. And each of these sets are coming away and they're saying, okay, this is what we see. And they'll give you a report, and it's a consistent report within that group. They say, okay, everybody talking about these kind of experiences are saying this, this, this. And each of these groups are separate, and they're not taking into account what the other groups that presumably are also talking about what happens after death. They're not taking that into account. As far as I know, my research is the only research that has seen a connection between all of these different groups and say, yes, they are all looking at the same phenomenon. They might be looking at it from slightly different angles, but it is the same critter. They're all looking at the same thing.
Other than Christ, and we did not get a chance to interview Christ, but other than, yes, we've had phenomena after phenomena, people with near-death experiences, people who have no more heartbeat and no electrical activity, supposedly, in their brains, and somehow then they come back. But, Peter, nobody who's been really dead, really dead, as in dead for hours or days or weeks or months, none of those folks have ever come back. And so,
that's arguable. That's arguable, Art. I would give you a set of people who claim to have done just that.
Well, let's hear about it.
All of the people who have engaged in past life regression will tell you that, yes, they have been regressed in their memories. They have seen past lives. They have seen their past deaths. They have seen what happens between one life and the next. They actually are literally claiming that, yes, they died and came back from the dead. They're here now. They were alive before they died. So this is a whole set of people that are claiming that.
Well, you're right. There are the people claiming that, but still, these claims are coming from active, alive, living brains.
Mm-hmm.
And the point I was trying to make is that nobody's who's really been dead, physically dead, for, you know, an indisputable amount of time, a month. None of those people have come back.
They're not coming. Okay, they're not coming back and giving you subjective reports of their experiences. However, we also can look for objective reports. We can look at ghost reports. We can look at poltergeist reports.
Oh, yes.
These are second person reports of presumably what will be an afterlife experience.
Well, that's true. I mean, of course that's true. And there have been regressions into what appear to be prior lives. But the skeptic would say, okay, this is something, a fantasy concocted in a living brain that you're hearing about, that I had this prior life and I died in such a way. And now, getting back onto your side of things, people seem to be able to make, you know, give details of these prior lives that are then verifiable. And that does, I've got to admit, that's pretty strong stuff. But
there are some very, very good reports of verified past life memories, yes. But what gets me excited is that there is a pattern within all of these different sets of reports that it's a consistent pattern that I don't think could happen by chance. It would definitely not happen if these were figments of people's imagination, whether they were deluding themselves or whether they were intentionally creating these stories. This pattern that is occurring within all the different sets would not be there if they were just being created out of the person's imagination. I think this pattern represents proof that all of these different sets are actually looking at legitimate, objective phenomena.
Well, do you have any examples of people who have described prior lives and then the proof has been obtained that they were right or in some cases wrong? Or, I mean, how does that work out?
Well, actually, you'd want to look at basically the life work of Ian Stevenson. He's a professor at the University of Virginia, and he has devoted his entire life to researching memories of past lives. It's not past life regression. It's spontaneous memories of past lives. And, you know, he's written many books and articles, and he's basically devoted his entire professional life to researching this, and he's come up with, you know, an entire mountain of data suggestive that these past life memories have been validated. He goes and he looks at the memories, he writes them down, and he verifies, you know, different details within the recorded memories. So, you know, there's a lot of data like that out there. It's very impressive.
Can you cite any specific examples, you know, the hard proof kind of stuff of what people have said and then has been verified later? Are there any good examples of that?
Well, there was one example within Stevenson's work where there was a young boy that claimed to have been the husband of a wife of a family in India. When he was like 6 years old, he started making these claims, and they took him to the other town, and he identified, you know, a whole host of people that he had never seen before, and he identified them by name and by profession and identified where they lived within the town. It was a very detailed recollection.
That's pretty impressive, all right, especially coming from a child. Very impressive. Okay, let's say that reincarnation is real and that we do live many lives. Have you come to the conclusion, Peter, that we do live many lives? Is that your personal belief?
I believe that at least some of us live many lives. I don't know that we all do. Maybe we all do. I don't know everybody. All I know is that the data I have seen has convinced me that it is a phenomenon that has recurred repeatedly, you know, among members of the human race. What is interesting to me is that in a lot of past life regression reports, it seems that reincarnation is pointless. They seem to go through life after life after life, and they never seem to actually get anywhere. They never seem to learn lessons. They seem to, every life, they're making the same mistake over and over and over
again. That was going to be exactly my point, Peter. If you have no active a recollection of a past life, then what good does living many of them do you if you cannot carry the experience from one to the next?
It doesn't do you any good, and that's the problem. That's the problem, and that's what my whole research has been focused on, is the fact that if we divide at death, if our minds divide apart at death and we lose memory, then we cannot progress forward. We cannot evolve. We cannot grow. We are simply stuck.
Exactly.
And that's the problem. I think that is basically the number one problem that virtually all of mankind's religions were originally created to try to deal with and solve.
I think the Catholics early on believed in reincarnation, right?
I don't know that they called themselves Catholics back then, but very early on in the Christian Church, yeah,
yes.
I think that they did. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that.
Okay, you're absolutely right. Early on in the Christian Church, and then it was apparently removed from doctrine, correct?
It seems to have been removed from doctrine, and there's a very good reason why they may have wanted to do that.
And I think I know what that reason is. I mean, we were talking about it a little bit earlier. You just covered it. Really, you said, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that why it was removed? Because...
Well, no, actually, I don't think that was why.
Oh?
I don't think that's why they removed it. I think that they removed it in the early part of the 4th century when the church merged with the Roman Empire, with the Roman government. Because, okay, if you're the government and you have control over the church, and the church is saying to everyone, okay, you have many lives. You reincarnate many times as you want to get things right, with things okay. Well, then that reduces the control that the state has over you. However, if the state has the power not only to kill you in this life, but also to permanently condemn you to an eternity in heaven or hell, that gives the state an awful lot more power. But in order to do that, the state has to deny the existence of reincarnation. So I think that they did that in order to increase the state's ability to control the population. They said, not only can we kill you, but we can permanently convict you to heaven or hell for the rest of your life. We have that kind of power over you, so you better pay attention and do what we want.
That's a pretty darn good point. I see exactly what you're saying. Of course it would give them more control, because let's say you had committed murder and there was a death penalty awaiting you.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, what difference would it make to you if you're just ready to hop on to the next life anyway?
Right, right. If you thought there was an unending supply of lives to be had, then you're going to be looking at things a lot differently than you think. If you think there's only one chance and you got to get it right the first time around.
Yes, yes, that's quite true, but, you know, it leads me back to my chief worry about all of this, Peter, and that is that it almost sounds like you're preaching the importance of believing in an afterlife so that we all behave ourselves, and you're sort of tossing in a lot of things about the stories being the same and so forth, but it still sounds like you believe that we should have it for control.
No, I think that if we cannot believe, we're in a lot of trouble. But that's not why we should believe. We should believe because the evidence points in that direction. We are intelligent people. We have gotten to the point in our communications on this planet in the 21st century that we're not going to accept some some minute little belief system anymore. We have the whole world to look at and all of the world's reports to consider. And if those reports don't come up with, if those reports don't convince us of life after death,
yes,
then the world is going to be in a lot of trouble. But we are intelligent. Those, that fact is not going to change. You know, if we look at these reports, we do not see a consistent vision of life after death, we are not going to believe in life after death, regardless of whether it's going to destroy civilization or not. That's irrelevant. We are logical creatures. We're only going to believe in life after death if logically it makes sense to us.
You believe the interior passages of the Great Pyramid support this view, don't you?
Yes, actually, I do.
What is it about them?
Okay, well, let me give you a little preview of the passages. When you start into the pyramid, it's a single passage going down at about a 30 or 45 degree angle.
Yes.
And it goes down and almost gets to ground level before it forks off. And it forks off and has one passage going upward, another passage going downward. The passage going downward goes to like a rough-hewn cell or crypt. Meanwhile, the passage upward goes up for a ways, and then it splits off into two different passages, one of which goes to like a burial chamber called the Queen's Chamber, and then the one higher goes up to the burial chamber called the King's Chamber. But now in the pyramid's passageways, there's basically two forks in the road. The first fork in the road actually is the fork that goes up, and the first fork of the road is actually closed off by a granite plug. Whereas the second fork in the road, it's similarly clarified, because the larger the passageway to the King's Chamber is enlarged, right? So on the first fork in the road, the upper passage is blocked, whereas in the second fork in the road, the upper passage is actually enhanced. It's like saying, oh, come this way. This is a better way to come.
All right. Peter, hold it right at that point. We're at the top of the hour. And at a fork in the road, I guess. One blocked and one available for passage. We'll find out what that means when we get back. From the high desert in the night, this is Coast to Coast AM.
I'm new.